So before we go, we have to do our normal lawyer precursor. Nothing that you hear here. How does it go?
Nothing that you hear here is legal advice, nor should it be construed as legal advice. You're more likely to get legal advice from Judge Judy at this point. This is us sort of discussing a topic here, and we can discuss the law around it. We can discuss the politics around it. There's a lot going on in this space because this is a situation that I don't think we've had in this country ever.
Yeah, I mean, this whole show could go up in smoke, literally.
There are a lot of puns, too.
Oh, my God. This is one of the punniest thing of all time. And as a joke, but being truthful, one of the first movies, this probably does not surprise anyone, although I think I've smoked marijuana medically or personally like 5 times my entire life. It never did anything for me, so I just never really went to it. But one of the first movies I ever saw was Cheech and Chong Up in Smoke. So I was like 6 years old or something like that. I don't know, whatever. I saw Predator, Commando, then Cheech and Chong. Those are the first three movies. Then I got to the Disney.
That's quite a, you know, for your third movie, I mean, Predator, Commando, and then going right to Cheech and Chong. I mean, the closest thing you had is their cousin Strawberry.
Oh, my God. In that movie. Don't look at it, man. I wasn't looking at his birthmark, man. I was a kid who, like, since we're dropping quotes in the movie, you'll remember this. I was a kid in school going, because, like, if you remember, if anyone's seen this movie, the lady's snorting Ajax.
Yeah.
And she's like making these crazy sounds, and the cops are like these pumpkin heads, like freaking out. I was running around as like a 7 year old going to six, whatever I was, elementary, it was like kindergarten, first grade, walking around doing the sounds from Up in Smoke. Not all the sounds.
And it's funny because you look at that movie in today's context and to think that, I mean, that was sort of like, that was counterculture that was out there, those hippies. And now you go to a place like Canacon, and you've got guys walking around in suits.
Yeah.
You've got the business aspect of it. I mean, if there is money to be made and there's a place on Wall Street.
Well, so like that's the perfect segue to this conversation, because the reality is like, jokes aside, and quite honestly, for it to work and to be useful, kind of like the last conversation I had about cryptocurrency, you've got to get the regular people into it. And that may be through Up in Smoke type movies, or maybe just people who are regular Joes that just have never thought of marijuana as a thing that can solve medical problems. Like, they just don't think of it.
Right. And I think that with the conversation that's going on in the country right now is you have to really put it into two categories. One category being CBD.
Yeah.
The cannabinoid oil, the, you know, federal guidelines, less than 0.3%. That's in one category. That's the Mitch McConnell category.
Yeah.
That's the, we're going to make this an agricultural product.
Yeah.
Then you have your THC camp. And to be clear, because I think there's a lot of miscommunication around this. I mean, Mitch McConnell, I don't know the exact quote, was basically characterizing weed.
Yeah. I don't help this conversation, by the way, because I throw everything into, I usually just call anyone who's touched marijuana in any way a potzer.
Yeah. I don't know if there'd be a CBDer out there, but it's a so he talks about it, and it's like it's hemp's evil cousin, but it's the same plant.
Yeah,
it's just one, they're both dogs.
Yep.
And I'm one's a Rottweiler in terms of psychoactive effects.
Yep.
That's THC, and the other one's a golden retriever.
Yeah.
And depending on how you breed the plant, you either end up with something you can make rope out of, something that you can have a high CBD content, very low THC, which is essentially legal. You can buy it in Illinois, and that's, yeah, you know, people use it for muscle treatments. You know,
in my opinion, I think, like, again, I'm not super educated in this, which is why you're sitting here. But the CBD one is the one that to me seems like it has the largest economic potential.
I think they both have economic.
Oh, I think they both do, but one of them is like can be used across the planet, regardless of like your thought process on like, oh, is that a drug?
Right. Although I think CBD still has the stigma of, you know, somebody smoking a joint in a green van.
You let Apple and Tim Cook get on that branding. Yeah. They'll change that real quick.
That's where the industry's money is going to be made.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be in the branding. You see some high end brands out there like Lord Jones, for example. These things are packaged like, you know, Vosges chocolates.
Yeah.
And that was the interesting thing of seeing at Canacon is all the different vendors that are out there that are pitching their wares. Some of them are coming from a, you know, marijuana aficionado, you know, grow lights in the attic space. And others are approaching it from there's one booth I went by where they said, we've made some of the best perfume boxes in the world, you know, for Gucci and Tom Ford and those boxes that somebody gives you something in and you like don't want to throw that box away just because the thing is made like a brick. I mean, it's better than some of the other
the product sometimes of this thing. Yeah.
I mean, you get the nail on the head. I mean, the product itself is not that expensive to manufacture sometimes. It's it's that packaging that they're putting in that they're saying, you know, you're paying
like
$80.
I'm drinking out of. Absolutely useless. $2 and something for this, $1 for regular, but I drink this one because it's a funny shape.
Right. And it stands out. And you have an image of higher quality with it, which is why some companies are like, well, it's, you know, $40 for 4 CBD gummies. And you know, people say that's insane, that's crazy. But if you see the box that it comes in, you're like, well, this is a high end product.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of the battle here is going to come down to education, consumers. You know, what does this product do? How do you use it? How is this not marijuana? Like you think of your joints and the stuff that a college student packs in a bong, versus something that's a substitute for, let's say, an icy hot muscle rub, because CBD has that anti-inflammatory.
That's the part about it from a business standpoint that attracts me is just I guess for me, I'm always trying to think of scale with stuff. It's like I get it to the niche, like I get both of those versions to its own niche audience. Mm-hmm. But for me to want to invest money and really get involved in it, I want to see a large group of a large community who universally adopts it for a reason that is understandable, that I can,
right.
I can put this like the recent news that came here. That was one of those that I think it's a big story, but it's not, not a big impact now, but it is to the future. There's a couple of like maybe it's Illinois. I'm missing this. I can't remember where it was at. But the kids who are using, they're using marijuana as a part of the treatment. They can't give the treatment to the kids at school, but the kids can use it. So it's like, oh, the parents can come to lunch, take them out of the school and give them their treatment and then back in.
That's Ashley's Law.
Yeah.
That Rauner just
correct. Okay. So
signed.
Yes. So it's, I try to just ignore everything Bruce Rauner's. No, I'm just kidding. But I actually do listen to Bruce Rauner sometimes because he's a smart businessman at the end of the day. Anyway, that's a barrier that to me does create lack of scale. Like, I know that that's a regulatory thing and it's a whatever.
Yeah.
But like, until the mass population. You can argue how voting actually takes place. It's a different story. But until the mass population looks at this stuff and goes, yeah, that's totally universally safe for kids. Like, it's fine. Oh, yeah. We put it in his lunchbox. Until they see it that way, it is demonized and is easy for a lobbyist who's lazy but rich to, like, cling to it and hold the law against the actual marijuana industry, which is the part that, as an investor, you start to go, well, how does this work?
Right. Well, I mean, there's two things there. One thing being, in terms of investing in marijuana businesses, when I was doing, I moderated a panel, a legal and regulatory panel at Canacon, which was well attended. Then we did some breakout sessions later. A lot of interest in it. I mean, people want to do this. They do want to do this right. They want to do this legally.
Yep.
You know, that's where the lawyers come into this.
It's good news for you guys.
Educating people on the laws and the regulations and the politics around it, because I mean, frankly, half the analysis here is political. Is what's your local appetite for this? Because again, federally illegal still. We'll see if someday, you know, if someday in the future here, someday soon, that let's say industrial hemp is descheduled altogether. I think we're a long way off from having a federal descheduling of marijuana, of THC. But, you know, so one point there is the sort of the investment piece and the investment piece of it. And from the back of the room, a gentleman raised his hand and he said, I follow investments in marijuana business. And he said, it's a crapshoot right now. He's like, there's not one that you can point to.
Yeah.
There's some Canadian ones. There's Canopy, which I follow and look at a little bit, but it's one of those things where it's similar to crypto.
Yeah.
I think
it's very analogous.
Very bubbly. Yeah. A lot of money chasing very few sort of tangential opportunities, yeah. Opportunities that you can really, put your hands around and understand what they're doing.
Like a bubbler.
Yeah.
Bubbly to bubbler.
We're just going to keep rolling with the puns.
I just want to get the puns going.
Right.
No, I agree with you. I think one of the issues that gets in the way of this when we talk about political, I think the areas from, at least from my, again, I look at this just from a consumer standpoint, from an optic standpoint, I think as long as Republicans are controlling most of it, I think you're going to have a hard time having federal changes here, all the way up until the point that there's so much money to be made here that the country hits either the sooner of either we are financially in deep doo-doo and we need anything that will be a shot in the arm, or that's just undeniable. The opportunity is pouring over the top of the dam.
Well, and that's where I think the second part of this is that there is going to be that tipping point.
Yes.
That we have it where
we're hitting, we're not there now, but I mean, I think we're heading in the direction.
Unlike prohibition, where there was, legal, it was made legal federally all at once. This is some stumbles, and we've got some states that are doing it well. We've got some states that are having some challenges, including some of those states that it's been legal for a little bit now, California's having its challenges.
Yep.
Oregon has its challenges right now with overproduction. Colorado seems to be doing a little bit better in terms of their regulatory market. Is that it's sort of fits and starts a little bit on it. And from the investor's point of view, nobody really knows where this is going to go. I think that we generally understand the trajectory is towards a nationwide legalization of this. But in the short term, there's challenges with banking relationships. There's challenges with, employees and HR issues, and even those employees being able to get access with banks, which are some of the issues that I work on.
Filters down the level, because you start talking about investors and their portfolios and the financing and the money that's coming to them, and people going, I don't want you to spend the money that we have lent you on drugs or things of the nature that they don't agree with. It's again like crypto. There's like a connotation that exists in certain areas that's like almost hamstrings the growth which I think, like crypto, may well be one of the big reasons that it becomes a success, is that we saw what happens when you just let people trade and buy and grow and do whatever. And we're like, whoa, that didn't work at all. And so you sort of let the market shape itself by putting a box around it. Like, we're not regulating you on a case-by-case basis, but let's just say I'm putting a box around you to make sure you don't go too far.
Yeah.
And that sort of forces you to find the right, mix, if you will.
And I think that's where there's a lot of fine-tuning that needs to go on at the state level.
Yeah.
That's actually very valuable as a sort of using the states as a laboratory.
Yeah.
For how this could be done at the federal level.
Another pun.
Because you do have, I'll just keep burning them.
You should.
Because what you have is what's going to work and what's not going to work. I mean, we've seen some challenges. So I was recently talking about this in Boston at CannaCon, where you have basically three different taxes that are applied to it. I mean, you have a state sales tax, you have an excise tax, and then you have this 3% municipal tax that can be applied to it. And some of the municipalities are going a little bit nuts, and they're saying, well, because of increased police presence and traffic patterns that we're going to have to change to accommodate these dispensaries, we need to charge you this percentage. And sometimes it's a little bit above 3%, I've heard, of a tax on this. And, it got to the point where the Massachusetts Cannabis Commissioner had to come out and say, look, dial it back a little bit. This is not the way this is supposed to work. So I think there's going to be some growing pains around it. I think also with just looking at the tax issue itself, from the state level, is making sure that the taxes are not so high that it enables the black market for marijuana to continue to flourish, just because the cost of legal marijuana in recreational states is prohibitively high.
That's the one thing that of all of the arguments that I've heard is like a threat to me is, and I don't, I'm sure you've heard this, but like the comparison that I hear frequently from investor types talking about like why they would versus why they wouldn't get involved is pharmaceuticals. So like they'll sit there and be like, oh my God, like look at the upside. Like everyone's a drug addict in America, which is fantastic for our business, which is disgusting, but true. And then they compare it to that. And it's like, yeah, but not really comparable at all, because other than meth, nobody, no regular Joe can go on YouTube and figure out how to make an aspirin and make it in their basement and sell it to me for 50 cents less.
Right.
So like, if we don't, if the government and the people who are building and investing in these companies don't make sure that they have really done the math to know that the tax rate is going to be X and we're not going to gouge, we're not, there's no usury things going on here. We're just going to put this flat tax on it. Doesn't matter who you are, who buys it, poor or rich, everyone is going to get taxed. If we don't do something like that, it is going to be so easy for people to shortcut the market and black market things.
Sure. Because at the end of the day, the application, whether you're talking about CBD,
in this case, we're probably talking THC.
But in this case, THC, once you extract that from the plant, I mean, a lot of the applications are pretty easy for people to come up with themselves. Yeah. It doesn't need to be in a pill form. It doesn't need to be in a mist form, except in certain situations. Now, you may be combining with other drugs, other things, although, you know, recently the FDA, as you may know, approved a drug based on THC or based on the marijuana plant to treat epileptic seizures.
Yep.
That was big news. That was an instance where maybe as the public gets more educated about the healthful benefits of it, the application of it, public opinion will shift into this is something that's more akin to having a whiskey sour on a Saturday night.
So my using the analogy of meth was not good.
I think that
not preferred for the industry.
Probably not. I think they avoid the schedule ones and schedule twos.
Made a joke about freebasing, but I left it out there. But then I just said it, and so now I've done myself harm.
But that's a stigma that they're trying to overcome. It's this is an illegal substance and is somehow inherently bad for you. Sure, right? Can you harm yourself with marijuana? Yes.
You can hang yourself driving. High driving in convertibles.
Right.
So, this is against, we'll kind of wrap quickly here, but like the part of this that I find interesting is the history of watching this, right? Go back, 2018. So 2015, I had a couple of investors from a group called Panther Capital on my shows before I was doing the Technori show. And he was investing in marijuana, and he made the funny term then. It's still funny now, I think. He's like, marijuana is one of the very few, if only, products, services, whatever, that you don't want the founder or the creator to use his own product. Like, that was like, okay, it's funny. And I made a joke about it, and he was like, no, but seriously, the only thing that's going to ruin this investment opportunity for me and others like me, who, and many of these people have never used marijuana ever in their life, is people thinking and making an assumption that weed is a drug and you make, it's bad. Drugs are bad. And the part that I laughed at and said, don't worry about it. I don't know if this is going to work out, but this is just my natural senses. Anything that's worth a Gordon Gekko quote, anything that's worth doing is worth doing for some money. And if there's a profit to be made in this, a smart marketer will come out and they will make it okay. Just like alcohol, just like anything else, just like pharmaceuticals, just like diet pills. There's stuff that we have every single day that literally kills people every day. People drop dead from a heart attack because they took caffeine pills to lose weight. And we find a marketing company that figures out a way to make it seem like it's a cool thing to do and you'll take it.
Well, we could do a whole nother show on the situation in Canada where they've restricted the marketing up there. And it's like sort of plain Jane.
Yeah. Another pun.
Packaging. And that, from the marketer side, makes the challenge as to how do I differentiate my product from other products out there.
I like that as a sprint. I like you doing that internally as an innovation sprint to figure out how to better, better describe my value prop. But I have to ask if that's your regulation. I have to say, are you really do you really want marijuana industry in your country?
Yeah, and I think that there's a lot of push and pull going on in Canada right now. I think they're trying to figure out, just like a lot of the states are.
Yeah.
How do we regulate this? How do we make this work? How do we ensure that this, the three main concerns with marijuana, right? I mean, you end up with sales to minors, overproduction where it's crossing state lines into states that it shouldn't be, and you end up with organized criminal activity, you know, money laundering type stuff with, you know, bad actors getting into the space.
Which blows my mind, though, because it's like this isn't, you know, it's not like we didn't have alcohol and pharmaceuticals and drugs before and cigarettes and every other, like, it's weird to me. It's like the Texarkana, like we still have you still can't bring certain beer over certain lines, which is baffling.
Right.
And but you've got
there's a regulatory system, you know, like, around it.
How hard is it to figure out?
You know, they occasionally bust somebody on the Wisconsin border selling spotted cow.
My neighbor, not to get him in trouble, he just brought me a case of Yingling for the wedding. That was what he got, was a case. Thank you very much, JJ. Now I just outed you. But, you know, like we have, like, to me again, and this is on the THC side, marijuana is cigarettes meets beer. That's it's the love child to cigarettes and beer. Not quite as bad as cigarettes, not quite as good or bad as beer, depending on who you are.
Depending on what the studies say.
Exactly.
And that's the other thing too, is that this is something that we need to study more. I mean, yeah. We started out with that joke about, you know, studying it and field research,
yeah,
and stuff. Well, but at the end of the day, the FDA needs to give more research permits out for people to actually explore what the possibilities of this are. I mean, I'm a big proponent of whatever it is, let's know as much about it as we possibly can in a scientific environment.
Yep.
You know, where things are published in peer review journals.
Yep.
And people can study it, can do test groups on it. I mean, I think that, you know, to a large extent, there's a lot of stories out there of how, you know, whether it's CBD oil or THC has helped people with seizures, people,
yeah,
dealing with pain, which is the other thing that's on Rauner's desk, is the expanding out the category. I think there's 41 medical conditions in Illinois right now that qualify for medical marijuana. I think pain management, and where you'd otherwise be prescribed an opioid,
yeah,
should be on that list.
I 100% agree.
Because I think there's some studies out there, and I think there needs to be more research done on the issue of, is this a good substitute for opioids? Like, everyone's talking about the opioid.
I think again, speaking very uneducated on this topic, I just think that, again, not for maybe bipolar disorder, but I think for antidepressive, I think marijuana is a perfect segue to try the first non-therapeutic way to, like, solve a problem. And rather than jumping kids who are like 9 or 10 and are upset about their homework, and we throw them on a regimen taking pills that are changing the chemical makeup of their brain, that is so insane to me. Not to say it, maybe marijuana does have the same impact. Science will tell us. We don't know. But it's got to be better. It has to be better.
Well, you would think that, and just sort of looking at it from a common sense perspective, and there's some people out there that are, you know, will evangelize that it's a plant derived from, yeah, a plant.
Everything is.
There's a lot of substances that are not good for you that are derived from plants. Tobacco.
Heroin.
Being probably the worst one.
Yeah.
Heroin.
Not good.
Exactly. But I think that there is something there in terms of looking at how it's absorbed, how the body processes it. You know, which has its own set of challenges too.
Yeah.
With THC, and that there's no sort of, you know, a friend of mine pointed out the other day, there's no field sobriety test.
Maybe that is the big problem that we're really kind of circling around here, is that while I used maybe the wrong way, saying the alcohol and tobacco are sort of the baseline you should use to solve the problem. Maybe that's the fear, right? Is that the regulatory people are looking at this going, well, we don't want what happened with tobacco to happen again, where we said it was fine and we sold it everywhere and had Joe Camel coming around and all these kids smoking and have lung cancer at 30.
Right.
And on alcohol, we don't want a prohibition to occur. So maybe the reticence is the opposite of what I was saying. It's actually more that they're afraid of what they saw.
Yeah. And that could be. And I think that's where the states are right now sort of struggling with the regulatory scheme that goes around, you know, dispensaries and who's having access to it and what IDs collected and how long do they keep those records and who are they selling to? And, you know, as we talked about with Canada, what does that packaging look like? What are the warnings on the outside of it?
Yeah.
And then from a marketing perspective, there's a little bit of intersection there with what's organic and what's not organic. I mean, you can't be USDA certified organic if you're a marijuana grower, just simply because it's federally illegal. Now,
once again, I laugh because I'm sitting there going, like, we already had this conversation. We do the farm to table. Every single person's been sued. Ask, what do you call them? I can't even believe I'm forgetting the name. Chipotle.
Yeah.
Like, we've been through this. I don't see how it's different. Actually, like, I know from the standpoint of our conversation, I do understand. But, like, as a human being trying to pull from by general, like, I don't know, common sense, I'm just going, can we do this already? Like, isn't this, like, haven't we done this already?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. And you think that we're learning fits and spurts, I think, with this industry. I think what is clear, though, is it is here to stay. I mean, at this point, you know, it's going to be on the ballot. I'm pretty sure in Michigan.
Yeah. Oh, definitely Michigan. Next, yeah. Next, that's a
that goes
community for that.
That'll be the first toehold in the Midwest for recreational use. Depending on how the election here goes in Illinois, you know,
the Russians have to say. You never know. I mean, in the end, we can just do what we always do in this country right now, which is blame the FBI.
Although I will say this, it is a much less divisive topic.
I agree.
Than many other topics. I was, you know, looking at a poll. I think the last poll I saw was done in 2017 in Illinois. But you had, I think, in Cook County, 70% in favor, and Cook County and the Collar County, 70% in favor. Even downstate, 54%. I mean, So you're still looking at a majority of people just saying, "Look, this as a policy doesn't make sense in terms of." You know, Illinois' relationship with its sister states in terms of law enforcement, it's not going to make a whole lot of sense if we're worried about what's coming in, you know, from Michigan.
Yeah.
In terms of people, you know, going, you know, on a quick drive and bringing back stuff into Illinois. I mean, we have greater concerns.
Yep.
From a law enforcement perspective, with things coming over our border, you know, in terms of guns,
yeah,
from some of our states, that I think is a much higher priority than you know what somebody's doing on their spare time, you know, whether they're, you know, smoking a joint or eating a gummy or whatever it is.
I'll wrap this up with the same way we kind of opened it, other than the puns and jokes, and say that I really do think that this is going to be a thing. It's going to be a huge thing. And I think in the end, it's just going to come down to, like, the when is going to come down to the culmination of whichever comes first, of either the Uber of pot, who has enough money potentially raised from SoftBank or whatever to lobby and win the lobby, the economy hitting the shits and having no option except for to find another way to make money to cover our losses, or the just straight up healthcare tech opportunity. Just flat out, somebody did the math and they looked at it and were like, this is a gigantic opportunity for us to make money. And in some cases, once the negatives outweigh the good, or rather the good outweighs the negatives, where you start seeing law enforcement people saying, quite honestly, we've done the research and it suggests that we would actually take a lot of pressure off of our law enforcement by legalizing this and making a more transparent system so that people aren't all doing this, you know, like the gun runners. Like,
yeah.
That would be, I think that's a big value.
Well, and I think there's some law enforcement in the country that has done that, taken that approach. I saw some National Geographic did a special on medical marijuana, and it was interesting. It focused on Mendocino County in California, where the sheriff's office was actually giving licenses out to the grow operations there and using the money that they had raised to save jobs in the sheriff's department.
Well, I mean, I will say to that point, I actually played golf with a couple. Yeah, you don't have any water. We don't give our guests water. I played golf with a couple DEA agents who literally were saying that, like, among themselves, many of them are proponents of this because they think it would make it is one less thing to fear from a you know, whatever.
Covering. Of course, and I at the end of the day, no matter what happens with, you know, what Jeff Sessions says, there's still prosecutorial discretion out there.
Yep.
Where prosecutors are going to focus on those three things, and the Massachusetts, the U.S. Attorney for the District of Massachusetts, said the same thing. Shortly before I was out there at CannaCon, speaking on the panel, was, you know, those priorities: marketing to minors, overproduction, and organized crime. And this is, I think, it was taken very similarly to when Ashcroft said to the U.S. attorneys, "I want you guys to focus on pornography cases."
Yeah.
a lot of the U.S. attorneys were like, yeah, we'll get right on that, buddy. You know, a little bit further down on their list of priorities when it comes to law enforcement. And I think that that's where you're seeing a lot of local communities taking that decriminalized approach to it.
Yep.
That, you know, whether you believe it's not a good use of resources or there's sort of that political, you know, social justice aspect of it in terms of it, you know, enforcement of marijuana laws certainly hits certain, you know, minorities harder than, you know.
Well, yeah, that's a whole other show now.
And that's a whole other thing.
Like, how many people are in jail for life on something that is now legal? That's a whole other
crazy, right?
We should actually do a conversation on that because that's a big part of this. I think to end on this here, I'd say, whether you're for or against the legalization of marijuana, I think that that process, the awareness around safety things is a great grassroots start to get people to accept it or to consider it.
And understanding that this plant has different varieties, it's got different applications to it, that, you know, if Mitch McConnell calls it the evil, you know, calls, you know, marijuana, you know, the devil's weed.
Yeah.
You know, the you know, sort of the evil cousin of hemp. That's not exactly correct.
Yeah.
And just sort of educating ourselves, because we're not going to make good decisions one way or the other on this until we're sort of educated about what's going on and we have some real statistics out there that we've done some studies and we've looked at, let's say, driving under the influence in Colorado, and can we attribute any, you know, increase in accidents or maybe decrease in accidents if people aren't drinking to the legalization of, you know, of marijuana, you know, recreational use? Similarly, do we have some studies on it as an opioid replacement?
Totally agree. Very cool. Thank you so much for coming in here and
sharing
the CannaCon experience. Well, not sharing it. You just told us about it.
Oh, yeah. It'd be very hard to share.
Well,
but it was I'd say the main thing that I got out of this was that walking around that sort of convention center and saying, you know, to myself, this is an industry in its infancy right now. I mean, this area.
This is like the crypto conversation, which you've been a part of with me as well. I love these industries.
10 years from now, it's going to be completely different, and I'm just happy that we're going
to
be there.
Put our money in something, because 10 years from now, this is like one of those things where you're going to be like, whoops.
Maybe.
So we better figure out, stop buying it for, we don't buy it for personal use. We should just invest our money properly. Let's leave it at that.
Right. Sounds cool. Good.
You can catch this episode and more at listen.technori.com, on technori.com, or follow us on all social media channels at Technori. And of course, you can follow me at Katoon. Boom. That's a wrap. Sweet.